become your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to a new episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Sunday night, June 8th, 2025, as we bring you this new episode. The Chicago White Sox entered this past week with a seven-game homestand against American League Central rivals, the Detroit Tigers and Kansas City Royals, two teams that had swept the White Sox at their respective homes earlier this season. We were hopeful the White Sox could win a couple of games, but we're also prepared for the worst outcome this week. Instead, the White Sox surprised, posting a series split with Detroit and winning the series against Kansas City. Going 4-3 is a good sign that the team is picking up their play, and White Sox manager Will Venable shared how he felt about the week after Sunday's game.
A really good homestand. You know, I think several things really jump out. Number one, the support from the fans was amazing. There was energy every single game here, which was great. And the guys played great. You know, from every side of the ball, we played well. The energy was there. Obviously, we got good results. But I also thought we, played well in areas where we wanted to get better. I think every day we're coming out here with a chance to continue to get better, and we have. We certainly appreciate having the good results this homestand. But we know we got to continue to go and get better, with every day we have the opportunity to do that.
We'll recap this weekend series win, which featured the White Sox rookies making a big impact. Is Chase Mydroth playing so well defensively at shortstop for the White Sox that we can move on from Colson Montgomery playing the position? Plus, after Kyle Teal's call-up, who is the next White Sox prospect to be promoted? The White Sox head to Texas for their next road trip and around Major League Baseball. Who are we buying and who are we are selling on their chances of making the postseason? Let's get started. Lots to talk about. Joining me are Sox Machine's beat reporter James Fegan and managing editor Jim Margulis. And hello, gentlemen. The White Sox had a very good homestand. They went 4-3 against Detroit and Kansas City. They're 22-44 on the season. But since May 1st, they are 14-21, which puts them on pace to win about 65 to 67 games in a season. That's not great, but again, we're talking about a team that only won 41 games last year, so we are definitely seeing some progress in the last 6 weeks, Jim. And we talked about in our previous podcast episode, we were hoping the White Sox went at least 2-5 against Detroit and Kansas City, but the rookies stepped up big time for the White Sox this week to help promote them and be able to have a winning homestand.
Yeah, the arrival of Kyle Teal added another layer of rookie to the lineup, but not one who was expected to be overmatched or, Teal looked as ready as he could at Charlotte and worthy of an audition versus, other cases where it's been, just trying to throw guys in the deep end and hope that they can more or less succeed. And he looked pretty confident. Like the swings looked aggressive, looked like he wanted to know what to offer at and what to take. And aside from the ill-fated double steal attempt, the late break of home, it looked like otherwise he didn't stand out, which is what you want from a rookie, especially a catcher who has double duty in terms of being involved in every single play. So alongside Caro, who had a some moments in terms of going between DH and catcher, Tilma Elko, having a, big homer over center field. Almost he was set up to, do it again. He was set up to basically, burn the house down when it came to having the bases loaded and having one of those, ninth inning comebacks, the Royals usually pulling the White Sox. They could have totally demoralized Kansas City, had his chances, had a couple pitches to hit, couldn't quite do it, but when you have him batting ninth, I really enjoy him batting ninth of just having no expectations for him. And sure, if you have your first two hit game, terrific, found money. If you hit the ball 108 miles per hour over the center field fence, found money, and so that's like a nice feature to have. So like when you look at the lineup overall, you might expect some, say if they've faced Tarek Skubal or something like that, and who the White Sox dodged. Like, sure, I'm sure they'll have moments of just looking completely overmatched by pitching quality they haven't seen before, but against the Royals, who were not at their best, they look like the capable of giving the opponent a hard time.
So after this successful week, James, what are the vibes in the White Sox clubhouse? Well, maybe not on Sunday because they lost, but just over the course of this weekend.
Well, to jump on Jim's point, Teal did say I completely screwed up the double steal post game. I mean, I would think they would defend it on the idea that they've been pretty upbeat all year. Certainly Miguel Vargas today, or Sunday, I should say, was kind of echoing like that they feel like they've been playing good for a month now. Michael A. Taylor said similar stuff recently as well, like that they feel like the last, I mean, for Vargas, it's like, ever since April 23rd, I've been feeling pretty good about how things are going. Like, it's basically like his mindset. But I think they generally feel like they were playing more to their expectations or what standards they're trying to uphold in May. And obviously they've been able to get some like veterans back healthy with like Slater and Tauchman. And those guys have generally hit pretty well, or at least as you would hope. Benintendi probably pretty similar, like a lot of doubles this weekend instead of homers. But now that it's weird to talk about Benintendi like a power focused hitter, but that's kind of what he is at this point. So I think with the, certainly with like Martin and Smith performing as consistently as they have been, throw in Adrian Hauser as well, because he's obviously been excellent since arriving. The Cannon injury is the one thing, like maybe kind of throwing them off, where it's a lot of guys being thrown in like different weird spots. I think for Vassell, it's kind of like an upbeat thing, but you know, or some like Bryce Wilson getting like thrown all in these different situations, as much as that was what kind of his role was always going to be, was thrown at things at different notice. I think the people who have been put in positions to be kind of steady, like a young player like Mydroth, like Vargas, even Caro a little bit, like, you know, he's acknowledges he's struggling, but doesn't seem like, you know, crushed by it. I think those people are doing well. I think the people who are a bit flux, or like Tyler Alexander, who caught an Uber from Milwaukee at noon on Sunday.
What a story. Can you explain that? Like, how did this come together?
Basically, like his DFA window like was over at noon today.
Okay.
So they signed him to a deal immediately, and he knew that it wasn't like 100% that he was going to sign with the White Sox, but he knew from talking to them, like, hey, if we sign you once your window's open, we're doing a Penn game on Sunday and you would be part of it. So he was prepared in that sense, but he also like has been in DFA limbo for a week. So he's been like throwing into a screen. He can't like face live hitters or anything like that, cause he's not been on a team. But like, I don't know why, but like he was in Milwaukee where he had been pitching and had been playing at noon. So like the deal, like he signed it, became official, but he didn't leave until then. Maybe there's some uncertainty up until that point, but he caught an Uber, an hour and a half to Uber from Milwaukee. And as someone who myself was driving back from Milwaukee this morning, sneak preview for Sox Machine content, that seems like a wonky thing to handle. Like, I literally saw him walk out to the bullpen in the third inning and he like came in an inning later. So like he arrived probably in the first or second. He was, once he got dressed, he was out there and then he was pitching. And we're like, we asked the post game, like, any familiar faces, anybody you know? And he like looked around for a second. He's like, not a soul.
Are you ready to fight for them?
Right. That's insane. We're going to post this on social media. If you were the Uber or Lyft driver that picked up Tyler Alexander in Milwaukee and drove him all the way to Wright Field in the south side of Chicago, I need to hear your side of the story of what your thought process was when you picked up this passenger and then the address populated on the screen that you need to drive from Milwaukee all the way to Wright Field in Chicago.
So we'd specify that we asked him like if he knew a fellow pitcher, because that's who they actually spent time with. He does know Vinny Capra, but that's his only clubhouse connection, is the utility player who got cut from the same team that he got cut from, the Munster.
That's a wild story.
How common are Milwaukee to Chicago Ubers in terms of like how many rides were ejected before finding a driver?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know.
I mean, it could podcast be like fairly listeners. Common to where like, you know, the fare is good and people are driving, it's fine. But I could also see it being like they wasted 20 minutes trying to find somebody who would actually commit to it versus bailing on an hour and a half fare.
I know the recently retired Daryl Van Scowen has caught an Uber from Cleveland to Detroit in between like an AL Central series when the White Sox were on the road before.
What? How far is that drive? Wow.
Oh my like 2 hours.
Probably about the same.
Oh, wow. Wild stories. If you are listening to this and you are an Uber or Lyft driver, I really need to hear your perspective. So definitely reach out to us on social media. We're at Sox Machine. We're on Blue Sky at SoxMachine.com. If you're a Sox Machine subscriber, definitely let us know in the comment section. That story is wild to me to at noon on Sunday. Call Lyft, get in the Lyft, drive, have the Lyft driver take you all the way from Milwaukee to Wright Field, get to the stadium, get dressed, have a uniform. I don't know, did he even pick his number? And then walk out to the bullpen.
I think okay. He's had 70 before.
And then just...
It is a very, like, I just got signed in June number, but I feel like he had a signed in June number with the Tigers as well.
Where is he staying Sunday night? Now I need to know. Now I'm just curious.
They're flying out.
Oh, that's right.
Across that bridge when they get to enough. Us.
No kidding. So not only do you have to get to Chicago, you got to pack to head to Texas.
Well, he's actually from, he lives around Arlington. So it's that part is like decent luck.
Oh, all right. Well, good. Well, there you go. Stroke of luck. Wow. What a story. Tyler Alexander. There you go. Something to follow up James on that journey for him to join the White Sox. What a crazy story. Well, one thing that I noticed like this week, and my mind is starting to change. I know that I was an original hater of the idea of Chase Mydroth being a shortstop. Now, James will back me up and he will say, Josh, we interviewed Chase at Sox Fest and we asked him about playing shortstop. And he immediately answered that his preferred position was second base.
Yeah, he might be the original hater. You might be number two.
I like, wonder, like, was there some degree of like, because he's a cautious interviewer, like Colson Montgomery was getting the biggest cheers or some of the biggest cheers of that convention. Was he not trying to say like, oh, I'll play shortstop when he knows like the shortstop of the future is there. Mm. But then again, like our angle was like, Oregon kind of sold him as like a multi-position guy. Like we thought we might even see like Chase Mydroth play left field, like more of a Josh Rojas type of position distribution. And he was a bit more like, shortstop, the second baseman's really what I played. I mean, I suppose I could play shortstop as well. Like he wasn't kind of taking the bait on that. And maybe it's just because he knew he was going to hit like an everyday player and he wasn't going to have to do all this bouncing around nonsense. So
yeah, well, defensively, like watching him all week at home, I think my mind has changed because I was really concerned about Mydroth's size at shortstop. I was concerned about his range. I was concerned about his throwing arm. StatCast loves Mydroth's range at shortstop. And I just noticed, yeah, he doesn't have like the leaping ability, Jim. He's not Tim Anderson or Alexei Ramirez that can, you know, they had the height and they had the hops to rob some line drive base hits by leaping. He doesn't have that. But Mydroth covers ground very well. He makes excellent diving stops and gets on his feet very quickly and makes strong throws towards first base. He's making athletic double plays at second base. Like Chase Mydroth's athleticism is higher than I was expecting, better than I was expecting based on the scouting reports that we got from the Red Sox system. His throwing arm, sure, it's 28th percentile. He's averaging a little more than 80 miles per hour from the shortstop position. He's got what would be considered a weak arm at the position. But on the range side, he's 95th percentile in Major League Baseball when it comes to range. He's added 5% success rate over his StatCast estimated percentage of plays made. He's worth 5 outs above average defensively this season. 4 of those outs above average is at shortstop. Defensive run saved, he's at 1, but he's not negative. He's not a detriment defensively at shortstop. So I think I'm sold, Jim. I think I'm on the bandwagon of, yeah, Chase Mydroth can be a major league shortstop, which now enters the question for me, what do you do with Colson Montgomery? Which there's been questions about Montgomery's ability to be a shortstop, not even just in the major leagues, but also in the minor leagues. So let's start with the first part. What do you think about Mydroth's defensive play so far at shortstop?
To me, he reminds me a little bit of Yolmer Sanchez in terms of not being a physical specimen, not being somebody who's super fast, like he's quick or has some, you know, good quick motions, but is not somebody who's going to like lead the league in sprint speed or anything. But he gets rid of the ball quickly. Like, I think that was the number one thing with Yolmer, was that his hands were really fast, his ability to transfer either, you know, at second base, being able to do the quick pivot and fire the ball to shortstop, or if he's coming across the bag, just get rid of the ball to glove to throwing hand out. I think Mydroth has something similar, maybe not as fast, but compensating for the arm, compensating for, you know, maybe not somebody who's going to be, you know, just making sensational plays, you know, cross body throws, jump throws across the diamond. That's not going to be a strong suit, but in terms of getting the ball out, and even if he has to bounce it, you're giving a good hop for, you know, right now it's Tim Elko at first, and that's you know, a pretty good combination right now. So it seems like he's fine. Like it's there haven't been many plays that made me think like, oh, he's stretched out there, or you know, a ball gets through. I think it might also be, and I'm curious what this looks like at the end of the season, might be part of the White Sox better positioning as well, that he isn't required to make the sensational plays, or he isn't, there aren't many grounders past diving Mydroth like there might have been in other, you know, times of just like, wait, why isn't somebody there? I think especially on balls up the middle, I think a lot of cases where they cut from the center field cam to the home plate cam and somebody's there, and you know, Maya was there when he was playing, and then like Mydroth's there. So I think there might be some positioning elements too that are helping him to where, even if he is somebody who is a little bit range deficient because of just his, you know, lack of foot speed, that he's making up for it by, you know, whether it's pre-pitch positioning, whether it's pre-pitch motion, because we know they've emphasized that in lieu of like traditional stats to brag about, that maybe he's an example of somebody who's actually being able to put himself in better position to field balls. And, you know, so he doesn't need the physical gifts that other shortstops have had.
If I can give a devil's advocate, contrarian take, not even that. Anyway, I think as much as he's playing his way in a shortstop, he's hitting his way to be an everyday shortstop. Like, if he were feeling well, like statistically like this, but, you know, running like a 75 WRC plus, I think it's like, I think it could be a lot more taken like, well, it's good that he can do this, but it's a utility profile because like the bat isn't playing in a way that we're really going to prioritize him being at one spot, which I think is kind of like a bucket Brooks Baldwin's got put into, where they kind of assess, like, we think the offensive potential is not where Colson Montgomery is, so we're going to have him kind of earn his way by being available for wherever there's a spot, based on need, rather than just giving him a spot and dedicating it to him because the ceiling's there. So I think if Chase wasn't hitting, they might still be like, well, Colson's our chance to get big time surplus value out of the spot, so we're going to give it to him. And Chase will find at bats where he finds them. Whereas what he's doing is like, well, this guy kind of has an important role in making this offense go. At this point, it looks a little hard to see like him not being someone who just needs to be one of your best nine in there. So let's dedicate a spot to him. And I think that gives him a bit more staying power than even just fielding position really well does.
So then that leads to my second question. Let's say Jason Weidroth can make this stick, Jim. And to James's point, he's still hitting, carrying a better than 110 weighted runs created plus for the White Sox. Will Venable feels confident to continue batting him either leadoff or second in the lineup, and he's playing this well defensively. Is this the time for the White Sox to start trying to experiment another position for Colson Montgomery, moving him over to third? Or I like the idea of moving him to left field and try to utilize his athleticism that way as well. We know that Andrew Benintendi is one of the worst left fielders in Major League Baseball, and the White Sox are just rotating other guys like Austin Slater and Joshua Palacios in left field ever since Mike Tauchman has returned to the White Sox. So it's not like there's a huge hurdle for Colson Montgomery to clear to put a stake into an everyday position defensively for the White Sox if you try to put him out to left field. Like, what do you think about that idea, like trying to experiment other positions now in AAA with Colson Montgomery?
It's hard to say just because Montgomery keeps getting hit by pitches right now. Every time it seems like he comes back from Arizona, finds a groove, takes a pitch right in the kneecap, misses a little bit of time, comes back two homer game, ends with him getting hit in the hand. In both cases, x-rays are negative, but Montgomery hasn't played since. Like, he missed the entire weekend, so he's out. So I'm not necessarily closing the door on him playing shortstop. Oddly enough, it seems like it's been the better side of his game in Charlotte's. Like, people have been either, I'm not sure, pleasantly surprised is the right term, but not the problem when it comes to his readiness in the major leagues. Like, the bat to ball was the bigger issue, and the shortstop play was fine if he can get there, or like good enough to at least try him out there and then see how it shakes out. And then if he's not able to handle that position, then maybe think about it. But if Montgomery's game offensively comes together, he might be somebody who falls into that, like what the role James was describing, in terms of if he is a lefty patience and power guy and the hit tool is what you have to worry about, then he's somebody who maybe has to find ways in. Now, I think with Miguel Vargas at third, I guess he can always slide over to first because Tim Elko right now is not the fixture I think Elko's really going to have to mash his way to upset like Montgomery being frozen out of the infield. And I think Vargas is not an exceptional third baseman, so he would be the guy you move first if you want Montgomery still making infield motions and having, left field as the bigger off-season project. Wait till he has some time in the winter and even spring to get used to running around the outfield. But I think overall, big picture, if Montgomery is somebody who's more of a, if not a platoon bat, at least somebody who is going to have the bigger adjustment period because the hit tool needs to be shaped to catch up to major league pitching, whereas Mydroth had a full season of excelling at AAA and had nothing to prove there when it came to hitting for average and getting on base against AAA pitching, that perhaps to stabilize the infield, Mydroth is more or less the fixture at shortstop, and Montgomery is maybe a third base, and you slide over to shortstop to give Mydroth a breather. But given that Mydroth has played, some second base as well as of late, like, he's not the everyday shortstop, and like they've liked to mix him up, I imagine that's still going to be the case. I mean, like, they certainly don't like Brooks Baldwin at shortstop. He has not played there at AAA. He's played everywhere else but AAA. So it still seems like if Montgomery is not plan A, he's at least going to be plan B. And between Mydroth, playing through some aches and pains and Montgomery doing the same, that perhaps, they still want double layers of shortstop protection there. But certainly, given the way Mydroth has played both offensively and defensively, and that he figures to be the easier bet for everyday production in some form or another, I would, given that my approach to shortstop was let Brooks Baldwin handle it first, just to give him position. Like, now that Mydroth has taken that job and run with it, stick with him there and then shape other guys around it.
James, have the White Sox said anything to the idea of moving Montgomery around, Colson Montgomery around?
He split time at third, and that kind of originated with Mydrop being there the start of the season. And they've, you know, said that's something to have in his bag. But I think left field would be an off-season thing
okay.
if they try to do it. And I think it's narratively hard for them is the right way to say it, but like it's hard for them to kind of say we're still all in on Colson at short.
Right.
And start peeling off of it before he's kind of even in the majors or established. Like, I think it would be some cracks in the armor of what they say they still expect Colson to be to already start like, yeah, we still think the world of you where you're going to be what we think you are. Also, we're preemptively giving your job to Miguel Vargas and Chase Mydroff because you're never going to be able to unseat them. Like, I think that'd be admitting a point of getting to Colson that, you know, they would even say like they're just not at. I think they still expect him to kind of bash his way into that picture in a way that makes it a little bit, you know, inarguable at some.
He's not Brian Ramos,
right? Who is getting brought up as, you know, going back to the outfield once more.
Oh, is he? So they've given up at third base with Brian Ramos.
He's playing third like pretty regularly at Charlotte, but it's, you know, being discussed like, oh, we might play him in left field a bit more, which is something he worked on in the offseason and has taken fly balls before.
Yeah. To defend Tim Elko, defensively, I think he's been solid.
Oh, he's great. Yeah,
you can tell a big difference between, yes, Elko and Vaughn.
Yeah, and big being the operative word, like just, yeah, catch radius is there, and also just the, you know, he graded out well among his peers and coaches in the leagues he played in, for having just good reactions, good hands, and good decisions. So yeah, that's. That has translated smoothly, and it is noticeable, you know, as Vaughn goes through his, I guess it's kind of like, it's almost like a rehab stint at AAA, like trying to get him back on track, recoveries.
I don't know. Look, one guy, homered and drove in four, yeah, and his team won today, and the other guy struck out with the bases loaded.
Yeah, it's
makes you think.
I mean, like, yeah, Vaughn is, he's, you know, the production starting to tick up. He's drawing more walks at AAA, and we never really saw him at AAA. I don't know, like, if that's something he would have done, or would he have chased a bunch of pitches in the shadow of the zone and gotten himself out, or weak hits there too. But like, he's probably nearing a return based on the way he's producing as of late, to where if they go back to him and Elko goes down, like, it will be noticeable as throws go across the diamond, as grounders are hit to the right side, just how much more ground Elko covers.
Yeah. I just think at some point you're going to have to be prepared with Colson Montgomery for some type of adjustment. Again, I know we've been beating this dead horse, but in the winter meetings, it really sounded like Colson Montgomery was plan A at shortstop. Then suddenly he wasn't plan A at shortstop during spring training. He got optioned. We had to watch Jacob Amaya try to hold down at shortstop, but here we are in June, and Chase Mydroth has exceeded expectations offensively and defensively, where if this sticks, okay, it's going to be hard for Colson Montgomery to move Chase Mydroth off a position that he's been successful at, because Mydroth has set a bar pretty high defensively, not even just offensively, but defensively, that if you move Mydroth over to second and you plug Colson in, because that was your original plan last December, and Colson's bad at it, then it's like, now what? It seems like Colson Montgomery wouldn't be prepared to play any type of defense in the major league. So something that I'm keeping an eye on. But yeah, Chase Mydroth, congratulations. You've converted me. I did not think you would be good at the shortstop position, and you've been a lot better defensively than I was expecting.
Under promise and over delivery.
It's like to the front office's credit that just because like they messaged Colson Montgomery so hard, seemingly off season, that they at least recognized that he wasn't ready to do that,
yeah,
in spring and didn't stick to it, which I'm certainly, we can think of past instances in the White Sox history where they have kind of just stuck with plan A as they were taking on water. But they never, if Mydroth taking over his position was something that they foresaw, or like was a secondary like outcome that they were like were happy with or anticipating being happy with, they did not communicate that effectively in the off season. They didn't really bring up a lot of things that they thought was possible good outcomes other than Colson taking over the position.
Can you ask Chris Getsa next time you chat with him, or even that if it's worth a text message being like, Chris, how do you assess Chase Maedras' defense at shortstop? Are you surprised on how well he's playing?
I mean, I asked him about that a fair amount in spring, and he said, yeah, he showed well there, in the idea that he did prove something to them the way he played in spring. They certainly played him there heavily to the point where I think by the end of spring we kind of all were a little surprised that Chase went down because it kind of seemed like he was winning that job based on when he got promoted and the timing of it. Maybe he always had. But I think that by the end of spring they were singing a tune where yeah, Chase can handle this, but you also thought still that he was basically a caddy for Colson's eventual takeover on the premise that oh, it's just his back and he's a little behind schedule, but there's nothing out of sorts here, which obviously didn't reveal itself to be the case.
Chase Maedras, I think on Fangraphs, is in the top three in American League rookie position players when it comes to WAR. Like Jack Wilson's having rookie of the year type of season for the Athletics, but that's how well Chase Maedras has been playing for the White Sox this season. So something to ponder, something to continue watching, especially if Maedras can continue this level of production both offensively and defensively. Some other quick notes from this week. James Mike Vassell, he got the opportunity to start on Sunday. Now, he's not throwing a ton of pitches. He threw 50 pitches. He went 3 1/3 innings, allowed 5 hits, 2 earned runs, walked one, struck out one. But then again, with Jonathan Cannon and his injury status, do you think Mike Vassell gets another chance to start for the White Sox?
He could. I'd basically say it's 50-50, like with Alexander, like, hey, do we want to start with a righty or a lefty? I think I have the math right, but I think Vassell was starting on 3 days rest, which was good enough for him to throw another 50 pitches after he had thrown 58 before, but they didn't give him a full starter rest like they were going to, put him just on a 5 day schedule. So, and they didn't extend him. So they're definitely trying to piece it together with their bulk guys until Cannon comes back. And I think it can probably be pretty tricky with a back to really be that confident how soon it's going to respond. But, Getzlick at least talked on Friday, it's not going to be much longer than, the 15 day minimum. We'll see how he feels getting off a flight to Texas. Certainly haven't seen him throw with full effort yet or anything like that. So it might be a little remains to be seen a little bit with that, but they haven't responded like he's out for a while. We need to figure out who the fifth starter is. And it doesn't quite seem like they're pushing Vassell in there. I think he's very much top of mind for who to get 3 innings from, but it doesn't seem like they're rushing to get more than that from him.
Got it. So it seems like 50 pitches. Like we could see Vassell try to take us for 50, Alexander try to take us for 50, and let's see what inning that we're at to make additional in-game decisions.
Because he threw 58 in his previous one, I think it's a general idea of 4-60 if he's cruising, 3-50
Okay.
if he's not.
Copy. And then someone that's not cruising, and we did get this tweet. Can you guys talk about why Bryce Wilson's still on the team? Jim, it's not been pretty. In his last three appearances, Bryce Wilson has gone 8 innings, allowed 16 hits, 11 earned runs, 3 homers, walking 2, and only striking out 3. Bryce Wilson's season ERA is 6.95 in 19 appearances, going more than 45 innings this season. We know the White Sox are lacking pitching depth, but is Wilson the next veteran to go if his performance does not pick up?
Yeah, it seems like based on the reporting and the pregame notes that James has relayed about the latest thing Bryce Wilson is trying in terms of sweeper, sinker, where he stands in the rubber, arm angle mechanics, like seems like he's trying, seems like nothing's working. And right now, like his purpose on the team is to be the last pitcher Will Venable uses, like almost like try to get us 2-3 innings. If you take a beating, you're in there for a reason. We hope you can get through with like minimal
fuss. He's the General Custer of the White Sox. Yeah,
like, he's like the last line between like a position player pitching and the headline changing on Sox Machine recaps. But based on just the lack of stuff, lack of visual evidence that like he's going to unlock something magical, then yeah, I think probably he's close to being the next one turned over. I mean, he was only making 1.05 million, I think. So not much separating him from the contract Tyler Alexander got at this point. When you look at what's left on his deal, you know, Adrian Hauser signed for more coming over midseason. So I think that shows that he's not somebody who, you know, rates much differently than the freely available talent midseason. So I guess if he's down, you know, like guess Jesse Schultens is finishing up a rehab stint. If they need somebody on the 40 man who can just serve in that same right hander who can throw three innings, you know, cross your fingers. And if it doesn't go well, then, you know, he can be DFA'd as they just try to get through the season, you know, with, you know, more or less three inning guys all the way down. So yeah, I'm not seeing anything that makes me think that he's going to be around. I think there's a little bit of a be careful what you wish for, because Mike Clevinger just threw five shutout innings. So he's still around if the White Sox need somebody to fill that role. So I'll throw that out there to harsh everybody's buzz. But yeah, I think everybody's seeing the same thing with when it comes to Wilson.
I'd say if anything, he has like an edge of like, he was with McKinven. He was kind of like in Milwaukee, he was in a similar role, and he was kind of brought in with the idea that he'd be someone who would be able to like physically pull off all the adjustments and someone that you could kind of throw into any assignment without license. That said, like if you run an ERA, you can't really credibly say like you're doing fine with these transitions. So I think he has like some measure of trust or reputation, but bad performance can only outrun that for so long.
True. Very true. So a question that we also got, and this comes from our longtime listener, Andrew Siegel. And on Twitter, Siegel reached out. It's refreshing and exciting to see Teal, Caro, and other rookies up and active. Any updates on when we can see Colson Montgomery, Winkelmann Gonzalez, or other call-ups? So let me rearrange this topic. After Kyle Teal's call-up, we have seen a number of rookies make their MLB debut for the Chicago White Sox this season, and that was to be expected. James, who is the most likely prospect to merit a MLB debut? Like, who is next in line that White Sox fans could be excited about to finally see in the major leagues?
A debut. That's a really crucial.
It is crucial.
Qualifier.
Not reheating the nachos.
Like I think if Colson, because now that even like eliminates like even like Iroy Arte like wouldn't be a count. Or Nornestrini. But I would like, I think Colson is like the person they want to be up there soon. I think a sustained hot streak would do it. It's just been hard for him to do that, getting hit by pitches all the time. And then like next after that, I haven't been like super convinced by the command that he's shown in it, but like they want to bring up Winkelmann this year. They kind of said that's the reason he moved to the bullpen, was that he would get called up this year at once he performed. So theoretically with any reliever, you don't really need like a long window of like doing it before you give it a try. I would just lean, it's strange for me to say, as bad as he's been for so this year, I'd probably lean towards Colson a bit, just because like when he has been healthy the last 2 weeks, I think his progress has been closer to what would get a call up than Wickelman's kind of in and out strike throwing.
How about you, Jim?
Can I submit Grant Taylor into the record?
Well, James is wondering why he's not even in the White Sox bullpen
right
now.
I'm wondering the same thing, just because if it were a case where they wanted to move in the bullpen to see how it looked and also give him like a little bit of a break, like it's been a month. He's thrown 10 innings in a month. So he already wasn't on a pace to hit his preseason goal based on throwing 3 innings every 5 days. So if it were a break, I imagine it'd be like a 2 week thing of just, we're gonna get you space out a few relief appearances 3 days apart or 3 games apart, see how it looks for second half knowledge, and then get you back in the starting path. And yeah, it's almost been a calendar month since that happened, and they just keep instead adding things to his reliever plate. Here's your first ever mid-inning appearance. Here's your first ever multi-inning appearance out of the bullpen. Here's your first ever appearance on back-to-back days. And that's not something you do if you're trying to get a guy back in the starting path. That seems like somebody they're grooming to be a reliever. So I think the only thing that's maybe holding him back is that he's not on the 40-man and doesn't require immediate 40-man consideration. Like, he's still got a year before that happens. So, if they wanted to do like Peyton Pollett in the same idea first, because he would be first in line for the Rule 5 protection line, then perhaps they go that route, and just more a matter of waiting until other 40-man decisions are made to open up that roster spot for Taylor. But based on how he's throwing, based on how little he has to learn as a reliever in Birmingham, and he seems like somebody who could make the jump, no question, from Birmingham to Chicago based on like what he's throwing, the order he's throwing it. He's not somebody pumping fastballs 60% of the time. He's mixing it up. Like, the curveball looks pretty incredible. The cutter's like 94, along with 100 mile per hour heat, and the changeup is the only thing that's gotten tabled, I think, from his preseason to-do list. That I would expect him, or I should say, it wouldn't surprise me if like he were called up tomorrow. I don't think it'll be the case, but in terms of just the workload they're giving him, it really seems like they're shaping it to be somebody who can be ready to fill a major league bullpen spot versus somebody who might be rotation depth in the middle of next season.
Any whispers of a possible Grant Taylor call up soon, James?
Sure. I mean, they talk about like that's kind of when he made that transition, it was with the idea that like, I mean, they were already kind of aiming for end of
He'll be
season
joining.
bullpen cameo like other guys did last September. And once he made the transition, it was with the idea that he could do that in Chicago this year. And, I think the stuff is there. And I don't know if you'd put him in a position to be like super two or anything like that, like at the front part of the year, but I think it's his performance level is on that level where you could see it. And they've kind of talked about like, yeah, this is a way he could contribute this season in this role. So if anything, like I don't think necessarily a promotion to Charlotte is necessary for it to happen because that's not really any place where they covet sending like really their top tier pitching prospect.
And also, like, Jordan Leisure is leaving a high octane righty void in the bullpen. Like, they keep trying to give it shots and it's not quite working. So, Stephen Wilson, I think, is doing a pretty good job of showing some veteran moxie in those spots with his improved sweeper this year. He's also had some scares, some deep fly balls in the warning track. So I think they'd like somebody to provide some late game stability besides Cam Boozer from the left side. So there's been, I didn't get any when I was in Birmingham, no signs that he's being called up. But also, Taylor said, like, as I'm in the bullpen until they tell me otherwise. They did not say it was a short term assignment. And the way he's throwing, the way they keep adding to his workload, like, all signs circumstantially point to something happening in the Rickon timeframe, the not too distant future.
Well, Andrew, I hope that answers your question, but thank you so much for reaching out. It's a definitely a good topic, especially in light of Kyle Teal with his recent promotion. Who is next for the Chicago White Sox to get their MLB debut? Now the Chicago White Sox head out on the road, and thank you to our Sox Machine subscribers and supporters. James Fegan will be joining them for this Texas two-step as the White Sox head to Houston and Arlington. We are sending James to both series this upcoming week, so he'll be in Texas. No better time to go to Texas than in the middle of June. We'll get into that in a moment, see if James melts. But the Houston Rangers are first, and the Rangers have retaken first place in the American League West. They are
Houston Rangers.
The Houston Astros are first. They're going to combine now. I'm sure the Rangers would love that. I mean, you know what?
You insulted both fan bases.
I did, didn't I? I just insulted both Houston and Arlington. Those two fan bases despise each other, especially after the more recent American League Championship Series, which was very entertaining to be outside of Texas to see on how they interact. I apologize to both Texas Rangers and Houston Astros fans, but more to Texas Rangers fans than Houston Astros fans. But the Houston Astros are 36-29. They're first place in the American League Central. They are now 2.5 games ahead of Seattle. They lost their last game, but they're 6-4 in their last 10. The Astros have been very tough at home. They are 22-12 this season. In the season series, though, the White Sox won that series against the Astros in early May, winning 2 out of 3 on May 4th, Star Wars Day. You might remember the White Sox ended up winning that rain-shortened game in the 7th inning. Offensively for the Astros, still not scary. They're averaging a little more than 4 runs per game. Their team OPS for the season is 702. That's 15th in Major League Baseball. They are hitting better in the last 30 days. Their team OPS is 725, but they are much better off at the team at home. Their team OPS in Houston is 761. On the pitching side, again, another strong pitching team the White Sox are facing. The starter ERA is 3.61. That's good for 8th in Major League Baseball. The bullpen ERA is 3.39. That's good for 9th in Major League Baseball. Your pitching problems for this series, and each game is at 7:10 p.m. Central Time because the Houston Astros hate us at Sox Machine. Tuesday, it is Shane Smith against Lance McCullers Jr. Wednesday, Sean Burke, who's been throwing a lot better for the White Sox as of late, is going up against Ryan Gusto. And on Thursday night, it is the dart, Davis Martin against Framber Valdez. And I joked about the weather. Houston weather, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Tuesday, 99 degrees. Wednesday, 92. Thursday, 96. Thankfully, the Astros play in a dome, so it'll be air-conditioned. But James has to get to the stadium. James, are you going to be able to survive the Texas heat this week?
I don't know why I'm being targeted of the White Sox beat writers who would respond adversely to heat weather. I don't think I'm going to be the one who you see melting down literally and figuratively on social media. But with marathon training as it is, I probably won't be running outside, but I'll probably be walking to the stadium and just to expose the hotter temps because that's an important part of this. So I'm unconcerned. And also unashamed of pit stains that might develop. maybe I'll go for more some dry fit fabric over the week, but I don't know. It's a clubhouse full of like polite rookies who don't know me that well because they haven't been in the org that long. They're mostly too hesitant to say something. Maybe like Davis Martin would lie into me, but I think most who will be fine.
Well, I appreciate that, and we appreciate you going down there for us and to cover the games against the Astros. Jim, looking at the pitching matchups for the White Sox, like Shane Smith's been throwing really well. Davis Martin has been throwing really well this season, and Sean Burke has picked up his game. I feel like the White Sox, even though the Astros have been hitting a lot better at home than this season than on the road, I feel like with the starters the White Sox have lined up in this series, they're going to give themselves a chance to be competitive against the Astros.
Yeah, it's a good test. And to me, it feels like one of those series that might be determined by the, what's Minute Maid Park called now? Daikin Park. Yeah. It feels like it's going to be determined by the weird dimensions there. Like a couple games are going to turn on like a strange, carom off that, just outside of the Crawford boxes or Isak Paredes hitting like a 340-foot homer because, you know, he's engineered to, take advantage of that. Whereas the White Sox, you know, maybe don't quite have that going for him. Although Miguel Vargas seems like a good candidate for a homer next few days of just somebody who can buggy whip the ball into a couple rows deep into left field on an inside pitch. So, but when it comes to just the starters you want out there, I'm intrigued to see what Smith looks like on an extra day of rest. it would have been nice to see him start with the sweep on the line, just because I don't want to overstate the importance of a White Sox team that's losing two out of three games a season, sweeping a random series in June, but also just be nice to see it happen. I think it'd just be nice for them to do it and know like, hey, we can just completely demoralize an opponent on our home turf with pitching. And, but at the same time, you know, he's somebody who has to be guided through a full season. So yeah, I understand the big picture, but it'd be cool to see him, you know, on extra rest. It'd be nice to see him in terms of a great six inning start to be like, oh yeah, he can do this. He can keep the plane in midair just by giving the occasional puff here or there, but he doesn't need to miss starts. He doesn't need to be on the injured list to get through a full year. Like that's what I'm hoping to see from him. And then yeah, from Martin and Burke, what they've been doing.
James, the White Sox have the worst road record in the American League, the second worst road record in Major League Baseball. They're 6-26 this season away from Wrigley Field. Is this something that the White Sox are trying to focus on and try to get better production and more success on the road? Is this even something that's front of mind right now while they're going through this rebuild?
I don't think it's something that they've really cited as having a big rhyme or reason to it other than it's a young team. It's rookies. Maybe it's a bit more difficult to just get used to the environment on the road, but it's not something that's like, I feel like the last time that really like crept into thinking was the last time in the competitive where the 2022 team was like really at odds for like why they weren't performing well at home. And perhaps just because like, I don't know, the clubhouse was bad and thus like they didn't really coalesce there in any way that was conducive. But yeah, I think they view that more as like probably the issues of having so many rookies is that they're going to play up and home in a way that doesn't really translate on the road. But also it's a small sample size. It could be kind of meaningless as far as I think it takes one kind of road trip to, especially viewing that they've been playing better of say the last few weeks in a way that maybe hasn't been tested out on the road thoroughly. I don't think they're ready to be like, this is like some big crippling systemic issue.
I also think it's fine just if you're as bad as the White Sox are, like to optimize your performance for your paying customers. You know, being at the park this past weekend on Mexican Heritage Night seemed like a lot of fun. Like they're 16-18 or I think on at home, and the fans who are showing up against all odds based on setting the major league or modern major league record for losses last year, they are being more or less entertained by competent, credible Major League Baseball. The road team, not so much, but they don't get to see the road team. They're not paying to see the road team. And it was fun, you know, being at the park. Our longtime Swedish listener, subscriber Magnus was in town to see his first White Sox game and to see him thoroughly enjoying himself in a good game. And then knowing he was at the next game with his family and seeing a good, solid, competent, professional 4-1 victory. Like that's what you want. People showing up to the ballpark for the first time or first time in a while and being like, hey, this isn't bad. So yeah. I'm all for them allocating it as such for if they're going to be playing 333 baseball to be doing near 500 baseball at home. And then on the road, who cares? I guess it matters more now that they're on Comcast and more people can be watching them accidentally or without great effort. So maybe, you know, ratings will matter a little bit, but for the time being, like if they're out of sight, out of mind, and if they're at home, then that's the time to show up.
Yeah. It was great to meet you, Magnus. It's great to meet your family on Saturday. 2-0, his lifetime record attending home White Sox games.
Well, did he go to Sunday's game or did he?
He skipped Sunday.
Okay. Oh, so that's why they lost.
Yeah. That's why they lost. So Magnus will try to figure out how to get you season tickets and find you housing in Chicago next season. It was funny. One of his sons is like, this guy sounds just like the guy on the podcast. And Magnus is like, it is him. You're not going to believe this. And then his son proceeded to tell me why Swedish pizza is better than American pizza. And he is young. That's all I got to say. the White Sox this year at home are averaging 4.09 runs per game. on the road, 2.94. So something to focus on if the White Sox can get a little bit more offensive production on the road. They are a much better hitting team at Wrigley Field than they are on the road. So I think that's one indicator if the White Sox should win more games on the road and try to shrink that 20-game gap. It's going to be on the offensive side. Let's see if the White Sox can score some runs against the Astros. Because again, their last road series in Baltimore, they scored 5 runs in 3 games. Hopefully we don't see that against the Astros. It'll be a very late Thursday night for us at Sox Machine, but we will do our best to get you guys a new podcast episode Friday morning to recap what happens against Houston and get ready for the White Sox Rangers series, as James will be going to both series in Texas. Again, thank you so much to our Sox Machine subscribers and supporters for making this road trip happen. And then finally, as we always do for the Monday morning podcast, we take a look around Major League Baseball, but I have a theme for this one. Let's go to our who we are buying or who we are selling when looking around Major League Baseball. Because we're already starting to see some teams get ready to go in trade mode. Lamont Wade Jr. wasn't hitting all that well for the San Francisco Giants, but he just got traded over to Anaheim. Another weird move by the Angels, but yeah, we'll see how that works out for the Angels. But the Giants have been playing really good baseball. The Mets have now a pretty healthy lead in the National League East. We mentioned the Astros have taken over the American League West. The Dodgers are only a game ahead of the Padres and Giants in the National League West. So we still have some pretty tight races, some surprising results so far as we are inching closer to the halfway point of Major League Baseball. But let's start with who we are buying. So when you look at the standings right now, Jim and James, which team are you buying their chances of making the postseason? And Jim, who are you buying right now in Major League Baseball?
Are you in terms of like the...
Like you have a feeling like this looks like a playoff team.
But I'm thinking like besides the obvious candidates, like the who are in first place, running alongside, like the Giants seem pretty solid. Like the Giants were a team where you look at the roster and not all that impressive. Like they have some talent, but they also have that kind of, I guess it doesn't apply to the Astros because they're playing pretty well too. But in terms of like having Buster Posey come in and upset the previous very deliberate front office, analytically oriented, they said we want to shoot from the hip, major leaguer who tells it like he sees it and going in that direction, which is always a little bit scary in some regards. But it seems like right now the mix is there. I think having the frontline pitching that they do helps, having the big ballpark that they do helps. And so, allows them to play the run prevention game, but it's holding together. So I think they're a team when paired with one of the teams I'm selling in that division, that all of a sudden I can see them being well positioned to be running second or third behind the Dodgers. And, given that the Dodgers keep shedding arms because of just how, whatever they do to pitchers there, like, that might be something that prevents them from getting like true escape velocity from the rest of that division.
The Dodgers still don't have any breathing room. James, how about you? Who are you buying around Major League Baseball?
This is unnatural to me because I lean towards being a hater and rooting for everyone's demise in the playoffs. So I'm buying the Astros as a display of skepticism of the Mariners and Rangers. The Astros seem to be a horror movie villain. They are around. I don't think, like, obviously the Sox took 2 out of 3 of them when we saw them earlier. Like, they didn't look good. They've since, like, pretty much not gotten your game out of Yordan Alvarez since, yet are still at the top of their division. The pitching's been pretty solid. Haven't really gotten, like, all-star level performance from, obviously, Yordan nor Jose Altuve. Whereas the Mariners, like, yeah, they lost Logan Gilbert, but are getting the best catcher season ever and are 2 games over .500. I don't want to, like, put myself in the crosshairs with a level of hot take, but, like, I don't know. Maybe one of these years Julio Rodriguez should get better than he was as a rookie. Hasn't happened yet. Seems to just kind of get slightly worse in a way where it's not quite prudent enough to panic, but not like taking this leap to carry a team the way he was kind of foretold to. Seen that before. And then obviously we're you know, Texas played in here and, you know, seemed like a better candidate to get swept than the Royals did. Like, sure, they've been hurt, and on the one hand, like, they haven't had Corey Seager like operating high of his powers. On the other hand, like, when they won the World Series, they get a full healthy season of Corey Seager. That's just not like what is built. Like, I think you could very easily get in a trap. Like, this will be the year we get 150 games of Corey Seager. I think you're seeing kind of bolts popping out the bottom of the undercarriage of that unit and a bunch of other places where I'm just not nearly optimistic about like the teams that were supposed to kind of unseat the Astros this year. And for the Astros to not even look that good and already be kind of sitting in pole position. Now, seems like Mike Myers is going to win this one in the end once more.
The team that I'm buying, the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yep, I was thinking in terms of Mike Myers type, oh, they're doing it again.
Yes, the Rays, 35-30. They have a plus 48 run differential. They have figured out how to pitch at home. Home in quotation marks at Steinbrenner Field in Tampa. They have a staff ERA of 3.42. The Rays are also 19-16 to start this season against teams above 500. I think a lot of baseball fans would have a tough time naming five Tampa Bay Rays players, but they're figuring out. Like, they started the season at the bottom of the American League East. They have figured out how to play well at Steinbrenner Field. They're playing against good teams really tough. I'm buying the Rays. I think that right now they're on a path to make the postseason in the American League, even though I'm not expecting them to add at the trade deadline whatsoever. And their prospect, as far as rankings, have taken a little bit hit, but they do have some talent down there in Durham. So I'm buying the Rays. On the flip side, who are we selling? So, James, outside of selling the other teams in the American League West, who are you hating on? Who are you thinking, like, this is too good to be true? They're going to fade.
I don't know if it's too good to be true, but obviously for the Twins, losing Pablo Lopez, I think, is pretty big. I think they kind of had issues with their pitching depth, even while they were getting like great performances to stretch of the season. I think Bailey Obers looked a little teetery at times. And, you know, with their, they don't even know who their next owner is. Look at a lot of these guys with their kind of uncertainty about, you know, how much they're going to have like financial resources, like kind of pushing at the deadline. I don't know how much like they can really sustain these issues with the rotation, or they really expect like big reinforcements either from their farm system or just from outside. So kind of thought they were dead in the water to start the season, and they've rallied, but yeah, it's really hard for a team like that to lose Pablo Lopez for 3 months from rotation that was already kind of doing some shuffling to figure out what they're how they're going to hold together.
Joe Ryan was telling Dan Hayes, friend of the show over The Athletic, that they're kind of looking at the mound in Sacramento and just how dry the mound was and how hard the mound was as a result of some of the injuries, because Pablo Lopez isn't the only Twins pitcher that has been hurt after pitching in that series against the Athletics in Sacramento. But we also haven't seen anything from the White Sox side. But the Twins are kind of pointing to the mound that they just pitched on in Sacramento as maybe a cause of some of these injuries. Jim?
Like, yeah, Zebby Matthews just went on the IL.
Zebby Matthews. So that's big for them. Yeah, thank you. Jim, you kind of hinted at another National League West team with you buying the Giants. Who are you selling right now?
Yeah, it's maybe not in terms of like selling a team that's overperforming, but in terms of like selling, like just saying like cutting my losses for the season would be the Diamondbacks. Just they were having a hell of a time preventing runs before Corbin Burnes got hurt. And now that he's done for the year, I don't know how they're going to pitch unless, you know, they have some turnaround candidates, but you know, just given the difficulty in the division, given just how many, you know, I think it's both a rotation thing and a bullpen thing. Like, just their games have been wild. And every time I look at them in the standings, like they every time they make a resurgence, I think, okay, they're back on track. And then you look at them still in fourth place, L4 in the in the streak column, or 3-7 last 10. And that was with Corbin Burns like faring pretty well. So with him out of the mix, like it's hard to see them getting the kind of kick that I thought might be coming. So I'm more or less inclined to say, like, yeah, better luck next year. And you hope they can, work around that Burns injury, when it comes to their, the planned rotation for 2026, because that's going to be a pretty big absence there too. In terms of like teams that are over 500 and still, theoretically kicking, like the Twins were up there because of the pitcher injuries. And I think that's one benefit of the White Sox playing in Sacramento in April, before it got hot, because I think that's what, Dan was saying, like the mound was too hard, and that just the landing felt all wrong. And so the White Sox playing there when it was pretty tepid, I think weather was like high 60s, right? So they did not get the blazing inland California 100 degree even at night type weather that teams are going to be getting. So as much as both teams, home and away, have been criticizing that ballpark, I think it's only going to get louder. Besides them, like the Royals also, you'll have some problems. And Bobby Witt Jr. is so good that we've seen, superstars carry a team. And I think Michael Garcia is being a pretty good running mate offensively, to where if Jack Caglione can be an above average bat, maybe not like a superstar bat, but even like somebody with a 110 WRC plus over, by the end of the year, they might not be terribly suited, given that there are a whole bunch of leaky teams in the American League, but they do have some problems they need to address come the deadline. Like their outfield's still a mess. Caglione took a pretty questionable route on a catch he made. Like, they're going to be sacrificing some defense. Right now they've been trying to play plus defense in the outfield, but that's led to some pretty dead ends offensively, and something's got to change. So really curious to see how they conduct themselves at the deadline, because there is, it's a pretty wide open wild card race, so they shouldn't count themselves out by any means. But as presently constructed, it doesn't seem like a recipe that's well suited to endure over the course of 6 months.
I did the prospect write-up for Caglione at Fangraphs, and it's kind of like tricky because like you watch him, it's the general evaluation is like he's got like the raw foot speed to probably hang there once he gets good. Like it'll take a while, but he could develop. But you think of it as like guy who just got drafted last year and is playing outfield for full time and not even full time yet for the first time. And it's like, oh no, he's gonna be in the majors next week. It's like, no, that's too soon. That is not ready for that.
Yeah, even when watching him and doing draft reports for Caglione, I thought with his arm strength, it'd make sense to try him in right field, but Florida moved him over to first base because of that lack of foot speed. We'll see how long the Royals continue putting Caglione in right field, but they need his bat in the lineup. Like we mentioned in our previous podcast episode, previewing the White Sox Royals series, the Royals are desperate for more offense, and Caglione delivered on Sunday. He had four base hits for Kansas City. The team that I'm selling is the Toronto Blue Jays. The Blue Jays are 35 and 30 this year, but they're overachieving their expected win-loss record. Their expected win-loss is 32 and 33. They have a 4.02 ERA Major League Baseball as a staff. That's good for 20th in Major League Baseball. They are 15 and 21 against teams above 500. And I don't know if the Blue Jays starting rotation is going to hold up for this entire season. I feel like they've been a little bit lucky. They also started really hot this year. So I'm going to fade the Toronto Blue Jays. I also agree with you guys about fading the Minnesota Twins. So to your point, Jim, about the Royals, the window's still open for the Royals to find a way into the postseason. But I'm kind of expecting a cold streak from the Toronto Blue Jays pretty soon, that this catches up to them and they fall closer to being a 500 team this season rather than one that would be in the postseason if the season were to end today.
Their outfield is crazy.
Their outfield is very crazy.
Like, I don't know what to make of it. Like, George Springer's the good one somehow.
Yeah, and they've got like three starters. Bohden Francis is not good, and they're just rotating guys in that fifth spot. So it, I don't know how they're going to last all season. So that's why I'm fading the Toronto Blue Jays, and the White Sox will get a chance to play Toronto, not this weekend, but next weekend, after a quick home series against St. Louis. The White Sox will hop on their charter and head north of the border to Toronto for the June 20th through June 22nd series against the Blue Jays. So we'll get a firsthand look and we'll see where the Blue Jays are at. Maybe they'll change my mind. But right now I am fading the Toronto Blue Jays. Let us know in the comment section and also on social media which teams that you are buying and which teams you are selling around Major League Baseball. But that will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You could also listen to this show and watch our videos on youtube.com/Sox Machine. Follow us on social media. We are on all the platforms at Sox Machine. You can follow James. He's at JR Fegan. Maybe he'll take some pictures and videos when he's down in Houston and Arlington this upcoming week. So you can also follow him on Instagram. You can also follow us on Instagram as well. And we are on Blue Sky. We're just at SoxMachine.com on Blue Sky. James is at JRFegan.SoxMachine.com. And I am Josh.SoxMachine.com on Blue Sky. If you enjoy our work and want full access to all of our coverage of the Chicago White Sox, Major League Baseball, and the upcoming MLB Draft, you can do so by signing up to become a subscriber at SoxMachine.com. Monthly plans start at $5. That gets you the ad-free version of both the podcast and the website, unlocks the comment section for you, and gains full access to all of our coverage of the White Sox and also the minor leagues. We also have additional tiers of support that you get additional benefits as well, including a couple spots open in our Veterans Committee, which you have direct access in a group chat with both Jim and James, so we can get all the dirty gossip that's coming out of the White Sox clubhouse and all the rumors that we're hearing around Major League Baseball, because trade season is upcoming. And we share all that gossip with our other Veterans Committee members. So if that's of interest to you, you can go to SoxMachine.com and sign up today. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com. You're on for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside Jim Margulis and James Fegan, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.